Minnesota House Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform for the 92nd State Legislative Session will come to order. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Present.
Vice Chair Frazier.
Present.
Representative Johnson.
Present.
Representative Edelson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Grossel.
Present.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, present.
Representative Long.
Present.
Representative Lucero.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Mueller, present.
Representative Novotny.
Novotny, present.
Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, present.
Representative Pinto.
Present.
Representative Poston.
Present.
Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, present.
Representative Vang.
Present.
Representative Shong, excused. And that concludes roll call.
Very well, there is a quorum. Members, this hearing is being conducted under Minnesota House Rule 10.01, allowing for hearings to be held via use of distance voting, remote electronic voting, or voting by other means to protect the health and safety of the public, staff, and members. The hearing is live streamed on the House website and can be accessed by visiting this committee's page. Also on that page, for those wishing to offer public testimony, there's a listing of the email address for our committee administrator, Mr. Jamel Lundy. Those wishing to offer testimony can email Mr. Lundy 24 hours prior to a hearing. And again, that email address is on the committee page. Members, we have three bills up today, that will be formally before us, and one that will hold as an informational hearing. And today's theme is Survivor Equity Advocacy Day. A quick reminder to all members, I know it's way out in the future, but next Tuesday we will be holding an evening companion hearing, or continuation rather, of our regular hearing time on Tuesday. It will be, hopefully, knock on wood, the only time that we will hold an evening hearing. I can't swear by that, but that's certainly the chair's intent. So please make accommodations to your calendar accordingly. With that, our first order of business is to adopt the minutes of March 1st. And Vice Chair Frazier, would you be kind enough to make the appropriate motion?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Representative Frazier moves adoption of the March 1st minutes of this committee. Members, discussion? I should pull up my hands. Very well. Representative Johnson, I think a voice vote. Okay.
That would be fine.
Very well. All in favor of the Frazier motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. And the minutes of March 1st are hereby adopted. Members, our first bill up today will be House File 3055 by Chair Becker Finn. This is Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives Information Reward Fund established and money appropriated. You all will recall that a couple of years ago, this committee and our body took, in my opinion, a historic first step in addressing this, frankly, centuries-old issue of violence perpetrated against Indigenous people. And we have since created an office specifically focused on the equity issues that all of that brings. So with that, Representative Frazier, if you would also be kind enough to move. Actually, we don't need a motion. We're going to lay this over. We don't need a formal committee referral motion. We would normally be referring this to the Ways and Means, but it is the chair's intent to lay this bill over for inclusion, possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. And so with that intention, the chair calls for House File 3055. Chair Becker-Fan, your bill is before us.
Buju, Niju, Anakwata, Kwe, Nindijnakaz, Leech Lake, Nindunjaba, Makwa, Nindodem. Really, thank you, Miigwech, Chair Mariani, for letting me bring this bill forward. And as you mentioned, this has been an ongoing conversation in the legislature for at least since I've been in office. And this bill is just the next step in moving this issue forward and bringing our relatives home. And I really want to, I think this is one of those bills where the title of the bill really says it all. It's a reward fund for information on missing and murdered Indigenous relatives. It's $110,000. It's a small ask with big impacts. And with that, I want to really make sure that our time is given to listening to the voices of those most impacted by this issue. And so with that, I would turn it over to my testifiers.
Very well. And I do see five testifiers before us. I do want to apologize ahead of time to all my friends here. If I move you along, only because we have three bills we want to hear and lots of voices here today. So please do not take any offense. This is a critically important issue. We want to honor your relatives' experiences and your presence here with us today. With that, we will begin with the family of Sheila St. Clair. And my understanding is Chair Becker-Finn's testimony will be read by, I only have a first name here, Renee. So let me ask Renee to come forward, please. Please state your name for the record and then provide the testimony.
Bonjour. My name is Renee-Ann Goodrich. I am a MMIW-2S, MMIW-R advocate for missing murder Indigenous peoples, working in the Twin Ports area, Native Lives Matter Coalition. And I'm here to share about our new reward fund that we established in Duluth, and also to mention that the reward fund, Gagi Gay Mekwenda, Mekwenda Goziwag, was created. It's a community response reward fund created with the city in partnership with the City of Duluth, Native Lives Matter Coalition, and Mending the Sacred Hoop. So we're really proud to be a part of this reward fund. So we wanted to share a little bit about that. But most importantly, the reward fund is inspired by our current open missing case that we have, and that would be for Sheila St. Clair. Sheila St. Clair's daughter was invited. However, she won't be able to join us today in testimony, but she will be on live stream. And we wanted to say her name, Sheila St. Clair. Sheila has been missing from the Duluth area and I wanted to share from families. We're honored to be able to help share words directly from Sheila St. Clair's daughter, Stephanie St. Clair. She wants to thank the committee to please support the legislation moving forward to support all of our relatives. Sheila is a sister. She is an auntie, mother, a grandmother, and she's a friend to many in the Duluth area and throughout Minnesota. Her daughter currently lives in the upper northern Minnesota, Bemidji area. In August of 2015, Sheila went missing from Duluth, Minnesota, and she was last seen on the 100 block of West 3rd Street. She is still being sought by her family and friends and relatives. And her case is an open case with the City of Duluth. The investigation continues. For over 6 years now, Sheila St. Clair has not been found. And Gagi Gay Mekwenda Goziwag Reward Program is a community response reward program in collaboration with the City of Duluth, Native Lives Matter Coalition, and Mending the Sacred Hoop to help bring Sheila St. Clair home. She's the inspiration for our reward fund. The donations, the reward fund is supported by donations. And it's the first of its kind in the state of Minnesota, established in Duluth, January 10th, 2022. We are honored to be a part of the program with community partners, building on the Indigenous-led community response model. MMIW and MMIWG2S families, their advocacy and their Indigenous communities are empowered and honored by the support of our state legislators in establishing the statewide reward fund. Families are on the front line, the foundation for the movement, and it's their advocacy that is the original community-led, Indigenous community-led response to the epidemic in the movement. So by empowering, by creating these reward funds locally in smaller communities and also statewide, we're empowering our families and our advocates that are working on this issue. Together, we can help bring closure and justice, and we can bring the change that is needed to promote healing and resiliency for families. And in doing so, we're building strong, resilient communities. I want to thank you for allowing our testimony and our inclusion in testifying here today. And we offer our strong support in the creation of this reward fund statewide. It only encourages further healing and the justice that families are seeking. And I want to say thank you so much for having us here today. Jimmy Gwetch.
Thank you, Ms. Goodrich. I believe I do speak on behalf of every member of this committee in saying that we stand together with Sheila's family in wishing her safe return and extending our desire for peace and healing to her family. Mm-hmm. We are honored that you are here with us and sharing your community's efforts to mend that sacred hoop. Thank you.
Jimmy Gwetch.
Next, we have Sharon Day, Executive Director of the Indigenous Peoples Task Force. Ms. Day, if you can please come forward, state your name for the record and give us your testimony, we would be privileged.
Abuju Nagmo Maingin Indishnagaz. My English name is Sharon Day. And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, grateful to be here today for the opportunity to speak to the committee. Every Native person is affected by violence towards our women, our children, our relatives, and especially two-spirited members of our community. Today, I'm speaking on behalf of my sister, Cheryl Day Early, and my niece, Karina Day Early. Karina's Ojibwe name is Wabashke Shi Benashi Kwe. She was born on December 31st, 1991. And was killed on May 22nd, 2018. They found her with a bullet through her heart and ruled it as a suicide without any investigation. What woman shoots herself through the heart? Her boyfriend, who was, as we say, Chamokaman, was abusive, and he was also a gun collector. Today, he is living his life in northern Minnesota with another Native young woman. And, you know, Karina was living in Tower. They have two police officers. And he did not call the police until a half hour after she died. And in which time he had time to shower. And anyhow, if there was such a reward, you know, maybe somebody from the community would have came forward to provide some information to the local police. This did not happen on a reservation. It happened on a small town near the reservation. Anyhow, you know, how long, how many times do we, our community, have to endure these losses to our families? There needs to be the campaign to educate people. I fully support the creation of this advisory committee, and also to offer rewards. You know, in our community, we're not, many of our, you know, my sister's family, they didn't have money to offer for a reward, nor did they even have enough money to hire an attorney to assist in the investigation. And, you know, it took them months to even get a copy of the death certificate. So I just want to ask you to support this House File 3055. Thank you, Miigwech.
Thank you, Ms. Day. We grieve your loss, and we hope that our actions can be part of your closure with your loss and part of your healing as well. Thank you for your testimony today. Members, next we have Alicia Kozlowski from the city of Duluth. Ms. Kozlowski, if you can come forward, give us your name for the record, and give us your testimony, we would be privileged.
Good afternoon, Chair Mariani and members of the Minnesota House Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform Committee. My name is Alicia Kozlowski, and I want to say thank you for all you do in service to Minnesota. Ozawa Anakwadukwe, an indigenous cause, is my Ojibwe name. It means yellow clawed woman. In my English name, as I shared, is Alicia Kozlowski. I'm really humbled to be here on behalf of the city of Duluth with the Gagige Mikwenda Goziwug Reward Fund, as well as on behalf of Kwepak, which is an indigenous women's collective based in the Fond du Lac Reservation, all in unified support for House File 3055. A recent study by the Urban Indian Health Institute revealed that only 116 of the 5,712 MMIW cases were logged into the Department of Justice's nationwide database. 70% of those were declined due to lack of evidence. We know the statistics are difficult and staggering. These aren't just statistics, as we've heard. These are our moms, aunties, sisters, cousins, your neighbors. According to the Minnesota MMIW report, on any given day, there are between 27 and 54 Indigenous people missing. As you've also heard, that includes Sheila St. Clair, our treasured relative from Duluth, and I could name on and on and on the members within our communities who are missing. When people are missing, that changes the story of our families forever. And if any of us had a family member taken, we would do whatever we could to find them. And it's that deep commitment to people, to Indigenous peoples, that fueled, as you also heard, the city of Duluth, our law enforcement, nonprofits, and grassroots groups to collaboratively establish the first of its kind MMIW G2S reward. Minnesota named the Gagige Mikwenda Goziwug, meaning they will be remembered forever. Like Duluth Reward Fund, House File 3055 will provide renewed hope and a missing link for more effective investigations through financial incentives that will yield critical evidence needed to bring our people home to justice and promote healing. This fund won't bring somebody back, but it will let people know there's value in them opening up and sharing the information that they know, that they hold in their being. This isn't just an Indigenous issue, though. It's a human issue. When any of us are dehumanized, we're all dehumanized. All of us carry parts of this MMIW epidemic in our stomachs, in our hearts forever, lodged there. And we need to be reminded that we're not only survivors, but that we're victors. And so together with a good heart, we can move towards that healthier future free of violence with these sustaining investments of monies and resources to tackle this epidemic. Our ancestors, I know our daughters, my daughter, our relations are counting on us. And so again, Miigwech, for your support of House File 3055, and the continued transformational work that you are doing and playing a part in creating a Minnesota where we can all thrive. Thank you.
Thank you, Officer Kosofsky. We appreciate the work that you do. We appreciate your insight that you shared today and your wisdom as well. And hopefully we can respond to your call and helping to create a tool that can aid you in your work and aid our and equip our families who are missing loved ones. Thank you. With that, we have Chief Mike Tuscan of the Duluth Police Department. Chief Tuscan, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony. You might be muted.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and the members of the committee. I come to you from my vehicle. I had a dear friend's funeral I was attending, and I'm coming to you from Belle Plaine. That said, I do appreciate this opportunity to represent the city of Duluth and the Duluth Police Department in our work to find and bring Sheila St. Clair home. You know, one of the primary roles of government is to protect its people, and we, as a city, as a community, we're unable to have a proper reward to offer to give us that information that we desperately need to solve this case. We know that people out there have information that would lead to perhaps bringing Sheila home, but also to hold people into account. And we have relied upon the good graces of our community to reach out and to support. And I'm happy to share that we've raised nearly $10,000. That said, we know that in Duluth, our indigenous communities are six times more likely to be victims of crime. We know that that's not just a trend in Duluth. That's a trend that is not only across our state, but nationwide. This bill will be incredibly helpful for us to have the resources to use to bring people forward who may be scared, who maybe need a little influence to come forward and share their information. This committee did a remarkable job, as Chair Mariani said at the beginning of this call, in putting forth a comprehensive study on missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls in Two-Spirit. The study points to really three primary causes why this is happening: colonialism, racism, and the objectification of our Indigenous women and girls in Two-Spirit. And so we know that in order for us to be able to have safe communities for all, we have to have the tools necessary to bring people to justice, to have accountability, to keep people safe and well. And this bill will be incredibly helpful for us to have, not have to go out into community to ask for their help, but to have resources available for us to use to get the information we need to solve these cases. One of the only unsolved murder cases we have in the city of Duluth is a case in which two Indigenous people were murdered that we were never able to solve. We had a suspect who has now passed away that we perhaps may never solve it. But these cases, we work tirelessly to solve them, to represent our community, to represent all in our community. And if you give us this tool, this is just one more tool that we can have to perhaps solve these important cases and to hold people into account. And so with that, I know that you have many people to hear and see. I think this legislation is really important for us in law enforcement to have to help bring home those who are missing back to our communities and also hold people into account. And I appreciate your time and consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. It's certainly not lost on the chair that you are joining us in your moment of pain and loss, and obviously driven by your desire for good public service to our people. So I just want to acknowledge and extend my condolences to you and your loss, and thank you for your work on behalf of the people of Minnesota, specifically those in Duluth, and for your solidarity in walking with our Indigenous communities and friends and neighbors and loved ones in Duluth.
Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Chief. With that, members, we'll open this up for discussion and or questions. And I do see Representative Halston has his hand up. Representative Halston.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. My questions are for the bill author. Representative Becker-Finn, one of your testifiers, I believe it was Mrs. Goodrich, said this is the first of its kind in Minnesota. Did you go out and find programs like this in other states? And if you did, are they successful? Are they working? And it's a separate question, but did you think about also putting a cap on the rewards? I don't see one in your bill. So those are my questions.
Very well. Chair Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Poston. I'll ask the second I'll answer the second question first. Subdivision 6 is that there is a reward cap. We left that blank for right now, but we did consider that would be something we'd want to include. But wanted to have this fully vetted in the public sphere as we talk about what that might be. As to this is unique, and what Duluth is doing is really. Really very unique. And I think especially at this point in history and in time and where we are for the community and law enforcement to completely be on the same page that this is a good idea and that this will have an impact, I think, needs to be mentioned because it's very important. To my knowledge, there aren't other states doing this, but that doesn't mean we can't be the first ones. We were the first ones to do the MMIW task force. We were the first ones to set up an office. And
the chair freeze.
I think the take home message is that. Sorry, Mr. Chair, can you still hear me?
Yes, I can. Yeah.
Okay, sorry. We need to be able to look at different possibilities for how to move things forward on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Halston?
Representative Becker-Finn, thank you. You're right. It's okay to be first. I'm glad that we are. And I'll just make one comment and then go on to other questions, other people's questions. But I will just hope and I will also pray that this does help, that this does make a difference. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Halston. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to thank Representative Becker-Finn for doing this bill. I remember way back when then Representative Kunesh-Poudin, who now is a senator and has changed her name, and I were working on some of these things together. And I shared something rather personal back then. And it's funny because I was thinking about it again just this last week. And I'm going to call him my brother, even though he was a foster brother. We embraced him into our family when he was 10. And his older brother, who was 17 at the time, and I'm still in really close contact with Alan, who was 17 when he came to stay with us when he was as a foster kid. But his younger brother, Frank, moved to Texas and he just disappeared one day. We don't know, to this day, we don't know where he is. We don't know what happened to him. His body has never been recovered. We don't know for sure if he's alive or dead. We don't know. When kids are in foster care, they have a little bit of a different life, and sometimes he would kind of drift. So we really don't know where he is. And my heart is with the families that have experienced that loss. When you don't know, I was young, right? When he came into our family, I was very, very, very little. And the loss is just tremendous. And I can't imagine the pain that the mothers that have talked about their losses today have gone through, because he was a brother. He wasn't, my own child, but I just want to offer my support and my encouragement and to understand that there are some of us on the other side of the aisle that really do care, really do support this. And we want to see these missing and murdered people. First of all, we want the missing people come home. We want the murdered people to have justice. So that's my thanks to you, Representative Beckerman.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. Thank you for reminding us that there are things that unite us in our humanity and the need for closure and healing and to know about our loved ones is it's a universal call. I thank you for sharing a painful story with us and reminding us of that. Next will be Representative Rowling, then we'll go to Representative Johnson, then we'll proceed with closing comments from Chair Beckerfitt. Representative Rowling.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Since this is a first time that we're going to be doing this, one of the things that we've talked about in this committee previously, and I'd like to offer to the author, is somewhere in the bill, taking language that would instruct, I don't know the right word for it, to report back on what the findings are, because I think this is amazingly important. And I think that a focus on being able to provide additional tools to, you know, bring this under control. And I've got a lot of words that, you know, I don't know how to use because this just seems to be so important. But I'd like to make sure that in the after the awards or the incentives have been awarded, where did they go? What was the amount that was used? And then I don't know that we need to put this into the bill, but I think it would be instructive to the organization that's put together, the task force, is let them know that we want to hear back, you know, did they try a couple different approaches, whether that's, you know, monetary or other incentives? Were there things that were more successful or less successful? And then how do we measure this? And how do we make sure that, you know, maybe when we revisit this, there'll be a better reason why the allocation and the appropriation could be in the future more if needed? And, yeah.
Chair Beckerfitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I think that's a great suggestion as far as a report. You know, this would also work in concert with the, you know, Permanent Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives Office. So there's certainly some oversight already there. The director of that agency would be part of the discussions ongoing. But if it gives people some comfort, you know, I'm sure they'll be keeping track of everything. So it's just a matter of putting it in a format so folks can understand. You know, we want it to be successful. I don't see any problem with doing that.
Representative Rowling?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that inquiry. I share your desire, whether it be this or anything else, in terms of what do we learn? How do we become better? How do we make sure there's good, strong accountability of public resources? So very appropriate inquiry. It sounds like the chair is willing to work on something like that. With that, then, Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Beckerfitt, I understand the need for this. What's going on there is tragic, but what's going on everywhere is tragic. The rewards can be very helpful at times. Hopefully it does work, because we need to get those that doing these, especially on the homicides, to get them behind bars where they belong so they don't affect any other families and have any more victims. I know it's hard for communities to raise the funds. A lot of don't have a lot of funds. In fact, tomorrow night I have one in my community for Nicholas Inger, who was shot and killed in Minneapolis, who lived 1 mile from my house. It's still an unsolved murder from almost a year ago. So I want to thank you for bringing this forward. I hope it does work, because we need to put these perpetrators behind bars. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Chair Beckerfitt, you get the last word here. And good bill. Thank you for bringing it to us, and really appreciate your testifiers here. But Chair Beckerfitt.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Mariani. And I do mostly want to acknowledge my testifiers and thank them for their work. It is very difficult to live with this trauma every single day for a lot of families. As I shared in previous steps in dealing with this issue and this crisis, my great-grandmother was murdered when my grandma was 5 years old, and on our homelands in the Cass Lake area. And so I certainly have felt the reverberations of that trauma even generations later, with how that impacted my grandma and everybody else in my family. And so it is personal. I think to really hit home on why this particular bill is really important, somebody knows something about every single one of these cases. There are not, people don't just disappear. Somebody knows something. And, you know, whether it's there's a young man, you know, and I think this is, it's a missing and murdered Indigenous relatives office, because it does happen to men and boys too, you know, certainly felt more strongly by women and Two-Spirit folks. But there's a young man who's been missing in my home community for 6 years now. Disappeared on Halloween night. Somebody knows something. And the idea with this bill and this reward fund is that there's now some impetus to get that person who knows something to share that information, so that we can work up these cases and we can get answers for the families, because I think that's the least we can do for families, is to give them some kind of closure and hope as they deal with these tragic incidents. And so I thank the committee for their time, and thank you, Chair Mariani. I know we went a little long, but I really appreciate the attention you're giving to this issue. Chimiguich.
Thank you, Chair Beckerfin. I've known this figure, but it's still stunning when I hear these kind of figures, like the one the chief shared earlier of our Indigenous residents being six times more likely to be the victims of violent crimes. And that's, I think, another argument for this kind of focused effort to get information so badly needed in that reality. With that, the chair moves to, well, the chair frankly just lays over House File 3055 for possible inclusion in this committee's omnibus bill. Thank you again, Ms. Goodrich, Ms. Day, Ms. Kosolowski, and Chief Tuscan for being with us here today. With that, we'll move to Representative Richardson's House File 2849. And Vice Chair Frazier, I'm going to lean on you again. No, actually, I don't, because we're going to lay this over. You get a day off, man. We're going to lay this one over as well for possible inclusion of another very important bill. Thank you for bringing this forward to us, Representative Richardson. And so with that, the Chair calls forward House File 2849 for possible inclusion in this committee's omnibus bill. With that, Representative Richardson, your bill is before us. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2849 would build on the bipartisan work that began last session with the creation of the Missing and Murdered African American Women and Girls Task Force. I want to thank all the advocates and members who supported the work, and also Senator Kunesh for her efforts in the Senate. This bill would establish an office dedicated to addressing the known disparities and crisis of missing and murdered Black women and girls in our state. The data is clear, unacceptable, and speaks to the urgency of the crisis and the need. The fact that cases involving Black women and girls on average stay open and unresolved four times longer than other cases reflects the systemic barriers and inequities. The fact that Black girls are more likely to be classified as runaways rather than victims of foul play, which translates into Black girls being less likely to receive Amber Alerts, media coverage, and immediate law enforcement resources reduces the chances of a safe recovery. While Black Minnesotans account for less than 7% of the state population, in 2020, 40% of domestic violence homicide victims were Black. There are also troubling disparities in human trafficking and sexual exploitation disparities. We know that Black women and girls are overrepresented, and they're more likely to be victims. And at the same time, we also know they are less likely to attract sustained attention from the media and law enforcement. Black women and girls are systemically disadvantaged without equal access to resources. We know the issues are deep, multifaceted, and complex. When I presented the task force bill last year, I shared we couldn't talk about this crisis and root causes without exploring systemic racism and inequities. To move the needle on the crisis, we need to address those inequities, and we need to uncover the reasons that cases that involve Black women and girls are staying unresolved longer. We also need to get to the root causes and work to prevent and reduce the incidences of violence. And we have to confront intimate partner violence, domestic violence, gang violence, sexual exploitation, disparities in the child welfare system, examining the media's role, the impact of housing and food insecurity, analyzing resources for prevention and healing in the community, wrestling with historical trauma, and creating pathways to building trust between communities and systems that have not operated equally for Black women and girls. This office is about building a long overdue infrastructure, one to address cold cases, track data for accountability, and to move beyond analyzing root causes to action to implement a blueprint for prevention and reduction in the incidence of violence in our state. We have lessons learned from the Indigenous Task Force, and I'm here today to sound the alarm that the crisis is continuing and intensifying. An office is long overdue to address the systemic public health and safety crisis. The current outcomes are predictable, and we desperately need prevention resources. I would now like to turn it over to my first testifier, Dr. Peter Hayden.
Well, thank you, Chair Richardson. With that, we'll welcome Mr. Peter Hayden. Good to see you, sir. Welcome to our committee. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Peter Hayden. I'm the father of Jeff Hayden, who used to be a colleague of yours, and some of you sitting at the table with me, and it's good to see you. You knew his passion, and Representative, Richardson, I really appreciate you continuing this. As you know, I have a daughter 6 years ago, come July the 23rd, was taken from me and my family, and I hear a lot of times they talk about Indigenous people, African-American people, people of color, and that the police say, well, they just were runaways. In this case, it wasn't a runaway. Taylor, Aaron, and Sydney graduated from Wayzata High School. One went to HBCU, another went to Mississippi State, and the other one went to Mizzou. And so it wasn't that pattern. Jeff was a senator. And so after my recovery in chemical health, I was able to do something. And now I'm stepping forward to you and just asking you to understand. I think you understand, but go along with me, carrying my message that Black women and girls cases are not, I mean, they just, it's almost people don't, after a year, no one's there for them with regards to chemical health, mental health, and gun violence. That's the whole thing, because I say chemical health, mental health, only because these issues have to do with the people who are perpetrating these crimes. So there needs to be other things. And I thank you, Representative, for asking for this bill, House File 2849, because it's so needed. And then the last part that I would like to talk about is that as a man, as a father, we have relationships with our kids, and we don't understand why you would not see the compassion that I have. So thank you for giving me this opportunity. The structure that is being presented, I hope you will move forward with it on this House bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Hayden. It's always good to see you. We see and we acknowledge your beloved Taylor, and we also acknowledge your wisdom in encouraging us to create systemic tools to be able to address these systemic cost outcomes that are part of of your loss and your family's loss of Taylor. Thank you for being with us here today.
Thank you.
With that, we next have Lakeisha Lee, CEO of Fly Economics. And Ms. Lee, if you can come forward, identify your name for the record, and give us your testimony, we would be honored.
Hello, everyone. My name is Lakeisha Lee. Thank you very much, Chair Mariani, for your continued support and allowing us here today to testify for House Bill number 2849. I'm a long-term advocate of missing and murdered Black women and girls here in the Twin Cities. Many of you may have heard of my sister, Brittany Clarity, who went missing in February of 2013. 10 days later, her body was found in her car in Columbia Heights, Minnesota. We live in the St. Paul, Twin Cities area. From that time that she was missing, I was in contact with a lot of different police departments. Our family was connecting with many different resources, but it still wasn't clear that we were heard. It still didn't feel that we were being listened to because she had just turned 18 within 6 months of her going missing. We're the experts in our family on her, and I thank you for your support with the creation of the State Task Force for Missing and Murdered Black Girls and Women here in the Twin Cities. You're creating a blueprint. And I believe that this bill would help us have a centralized place for the community to continue to put the recommendations that the task force will recommend into something tangible for our community. I'm asking for your support to include this in your omnibus bill to allow the recommendations and provide a place for us in the community, because this is not stopping. This is continuing at an alarming rate. Our communities are continuing to be affected through horrendous cases. It's continuing to keep us feeling unsafe. And this can help promote healing. This can be a place that provides resources and support, and that the community and help continue our commitment to community prevention. I thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lee. And I want you to know we acknowledge the beloved humanity of your sister, Brittany Clarity. It's important that we begin our work by seeing one another and acknowledging the humanity of one another. That's at the root of systemic failures along race and class and other isms that invite violence and harm to others. We grieve your family's loss, and we welcome your guidance on this issue here today. Thank you for being with us. Next, we have Aitika Rowland, our Executive Director of NCASA. Welcome, Ms. Rowland. It's always good to have you in committee. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
My name is Aitika Rowland. Good afternoon, Chair Mariani, Representative Richardson, and members of this committee. My sincere condolences to the families of the murdered and missing loved ones. I am the executive director of the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault, NCASA. NCASA is a statewide coalition representing more than 66 programs that are providing services to victims and survivors of sexual assault across the entire state of Minnesota. During my 22-year career, I have been devoted to addressing sex trafficking, intimate partner violence, and sexual assault, centering the needs of victims and survivors in my work. During my career, I have had the opportunity to see the best of humanity, and unfortunately, the opportunity to see the worst as well. As a director of service programs servicing women and girls, we experienced participants that were either missing or murdered several times a year. Unfortunately, the families that I worked with encountered many barriers to obtaining information and were overwhelmed by navigating the multiple systems they encountered, locating their loved ones, or seeking justice for their loved ones. In 2019, the FBI estimates that there are 64,000 Black women and girls that were missing. And in 2020, the National Crime Information Center estimates that there were over 90,000 Black women and girls that were reported missing. This is a crisis, and this is an urgency to understand what's happening to so many Black women and girls. Resolving this crisis is critical to our public safety and to our community well-being. MnCASA fully supports House File 2849, the creation of an office for missing and murdered Black women and girls. The office will build accountability, leverage responsibility, and facilitate resources and services to reduce and prevent violence. The office also will increase personnel that's focused on this issue, state resources that are dedicated to addressing murdered and missing African American women's injustice. There has been lessons learned. We believe that we can reduce the harm and save lives with the creation of this office. I would encourage us not to delay this work. It is long overdue, and there is significant support right now to address this known crisis. I thank you for your opportunity to let me testify here today in the committee.
Well, thank you, Executive Director Roller. And now we have Suwanna Kirkland, National Vice Chair of the National Black Police Association. It's good to have you in committee again. Commander Kirkland, please come forward, state your name for the record, and give us your testimony.
Right. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Suwanna Kirkland, and I am the National Vice Chair for the National Black Police Association. Last year, I had the privilege and the distinct honor to testify in front of this committee to urge the creation for the task force. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Richardson, for your support and your leadership. It's needed, and it's needed now. Today, I urge the support for House File 2849 to create an office for missing and murdered Black women and girls. This office is needed to bring hope, support, encouragement, resources, and crucial awareness for victims, families, and survivors. Time is of the essence, and that time is right now. Resources for cold cases to build infrastructure and teams and support around that is needed, and it's needed now. These incidents of violence, they're not stopping. As I've heard here earlier, they're just escalating. And the numbers are growing and growing and growing. This is courageous work. These women and girls that have gone missing and murdered, they look like my daughters. They look like your daughters. They look like your sisters and your mothers. So it's vital, and it's important, and it's crucial. This is courageous work. It's going to take courageous leadership. And so I thank this entire committee for putting the awareness on this and the priority on this. Families need hope. Families need hope. And it starts with this committee. And so I urge this committee respectfully to support the bill. And again, it's a privilege and an honor to testify in front of you yet again. And I support this bill as well as the National Black Police Association. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Commander Kirkland. With that, Chair Richardson, I will open this up for discussion and questions among committee members. We have three hands up at this point. Representative, we'll start with Representative Cleveland.
Members, this message is really a personal one to Dr. Hayden.
Dr. Hayden, Joyce and I worked together on a committee at Wife at a School years ago. And our daughters, your Taylor, my Claire, would often pop into that committee. And I just want you to know that I remember warmly Taylor's smile, intelligence, and humor. And with Taylor's death, you know, our community lost a beautiful young woman. So I'm happy and proud to support this legislation in Taylor's honor. Thank you.
Dr. Taylor?
Thank you. She was just such a wonderful young lady.
Dr. Hayden, I'm sorry. I transposed your beloved's name with your last name. My apologies, Dr. Hayden.
Yeah, she was just such a great young lady. And still today, they're wearing her T-shirts, you know, Stop the Violence at school. At school, and when they have a track meet, they put her. It, getting to the point was, I'm going to tell Joyce because that's going to help Joyce. It's nothing like a woman carrying a child for 9 months, and somebody else makes a choice that they're going to be God, and that's why I'm now standing forward. And the representative, I just asked her to. I thank her for letting me be the man. Taylor's daddy, because Taylor loved me.
Thank you, Dr. Hayden. Next, we have Representative Poston.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. My question is for the bill author. Chair Richardson, we have an office for missing, murdered, and Indigenous relatives. Did you consider combining these two offices together instead of having two offices that appear to me to be doing kind of the exact same thing and having separate offices?
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Poston, for the question. We did not consider combining the two offices because there are some unique differences. One, from the perspective of the Indigenous office, as sovereign nations, there are some distinct differences with the operation. And so that was not a a consideration in terms of bringing the bill forward.
Representative Poston.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. I understand.
Well, thank you, sir. Representative Raleigh.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Got a couple questions for the author. The first one was along the lines of what Representative Poston just asked. In the establishment of the office, is this going to be like a standalone office? Is it going to require like office equipment, like printers, computers, things like that? The reason I'm asking is along the lines of what Representative Poston is asking, do you think that this new office will be able to be located within another office? Or is this going to be establishing a brand new, basically you're going to stand up a new office from scratch?
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Raleigh, for your questions. The intent of the bill is to establish a new office under the Office of Justice Programs. So it would be establishing a new standalone office. That is the intent.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I've got two questions along those lines then. If we go to page 3, starting at 3.29, the bill does say that it encourages the organization to, in fulfilling its duty, the office may coordinate as useful with stakeholder groups and others. And then it also talks about some pretty pretty laid out reporting that's going to be done. And I'm wondering, wouldn't it be more advantageous for data practices and data sharing, especially as we're looking at like statistical analysis over a long period of time, would it not be better to be in an office that is at least physically within the same area as another organization that's doing basically the same work, although in different orbits? One, as you've said, would be, you know, in coordination with the indigenous tribes and such, and others in various areas of our communities. And I'm guessing that these communities are not going to be just located in the metro area. So I'm wondering where you think this office is going to be, and could we coordinate with the Office of Murdered Indigenous Peoples? Mr. Chair.
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Raleigh, for the question. In terms of the coordination with other organizations, that is definitely the intent. There's a current coordination that's happening right now within the task force. I think it's really important to acknowledge that there are distinct differences. And as we are thinking about the resource coordination and the development as well, we know right now that with coordinated efforts, cases that are involving Black women and girls stay open four times longer than cases involving other individuals. And so if we're not focused on the issue at hand, the issue gets lost. And so the idea of standing up a standalone office is really an opportunity for the needs of the indigenous community to be highlighted and to be met, and then also to ensure that the disparities that we are seeing within the Black community, that they're not getting lost in sort of the whole sort of complex of the challenges that are occurring. In addition to cases staying open longer, we know that there are issues around amber alerts. We know that there are issues around sexual exploitation as well. And so the idea of having dedicated standalone resources is the ability for there to be true community response to the issues that are most critical to the office based on what we know with the data right now, and based on what we're able to determine when we begin to track for accountability in the future, all of the reporting requirements that are within the bill.
Representative Raleigh?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. All of the things that you said right now, I think, could be accomplished with a space that is dedicated to exactly what you're saying. Although, you know, this is only $500,000, and I say that, you know, understanding that $500,000 is an awful lot of money. Once this office is stood up, I would like to see as much of that money going towards the good work you're talking about instead of printers and computers and so forth. And that's what I'm encouraging, and I'm not trying to be adversarial at all. It's just in looking at standing up an office, I think this is an opportunity to utilize currently available technologies and currently available space. Last question I've got, Mr. Chair, is page 4, subdivision 5, underneath the reports. Throughout the bill, it talks an awful lot about the communities and the individuals that are going to be served. And I've got two questions on the report side. Do you envision, I should ask it this way, what type of demographic information are you envisioning being made available in those reports? Because it does talk about being able to talk about the measurable outcomes. And so I'd like to find out what kind of demographics will you be putting into those reports? And then along the lines of the outcomes, do you expect the same type of demographic information to be included in those reports on any of the closed any of these incidents, and I'm trying to use the right words, Representative Richardson, if something is closed and we find the perpetrator and we're able to get it to the end of either adjudicating or finding out what happened, is there going to be data on the perpetrators, not just the victims? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Raleigh, to your questions, in terms of the funding piece, The funding within this bill, you're correct, it's $500,000 a year, but the intent within the bill is that the office would also have the structure in place in order to secure grants as well. So foundational support and federal support as well would be an important piece of that. In terms of the reports and getting to the some of the root causes pieces, the type of data that we have discussed being collected not only goes to the number of missing cases within the state, the number of homicide cases, case closure timeline pieces, tracking Amber Alerts within the state are examples of the type of data that would be considered. And when we're having these conversations around intimate partner violence and we're having the conversations around the rates of homicide related to that, we are looking at all of the factors, including the demographics of domestic violence incidences as well.
Very well.
Last follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Real quick,
10 seconds. In the bill, it says that there is going to be a report from the Task Force on Missing and Murdered African American Women. Have you seen that report yet?
Chair Richardson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The report is due at the end of this year.
Got it. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'm done, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Representative Collins.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And I really wanted to take a moment to thank Representative Richardson for bringing this forward. I think the conversation that we're having about combining resources, I understand that it's coming from a good place, but I think recognizing that the grants that both different offices would be applying to are going to be vastly different. And I would also, I would love to highlight the amount of money and resources that we spend searching for, missing and murdered white women in particular, but certainly just individuals in general, far exceeds the amount of money that we are looking to invest in either one of those two offices. And so I really commend Representative Richardson for bringing this forward. I think this is powerful and important, and our communities deserve justice as well. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Representative Hollins. And by the way, there's nothing, I don't think there's anything in the bill that prevents offices from co-locating. That's a pretty common practice, in our state where you can still have very distinct office functions, right? But where there might be a co-locating of services plus the ability to access resources from larger agencies. It's a good, efficient way to work, but while we're also maintaining the very distinct integrity of an office like this that is called upon to respond to arguably a very distinct reality that exists in our state. Members, I'm told that there was a public testifier. I apologize. I jumped over. I still have two members here, but very quickly, let me see if Aisha Abdullahi is here. You can come forward.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. We're a little pressed for time, but we certainly want to hear your voice. So you can give us your name for the record and give us your concise testimony. We greatly appreciate it. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you so much. My name is Aisha Abdullahi. And Chair Mariani, Representative Johnson, and members of the Public Safety Committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify on the Missing and Murdered Black Women and Girls Bill today. My name is Aisha once again, and I'm a Minnesota native currently pursuing my master's in public policy at Duke University. Prior to coming to Duke, I worked as a civic engagement coordinator for RISE in Minneapolis, a nonprofit organization that engages young Muslim women in grassroots activism and amplifies their voice to create systemic change. This past year, COVID really changed and challenged many lives, especially for young African-American girls across the nation. Despite the lack of attention in the news media, approximately 100,000 Black girls and women went missing in the United States last year. Some have been trafficked while others have been abducted by close friends or strangers, yet very few of these cases received attention from mainstream media. In contrast to missing white women, many families and friends of missing Black women and girls have trouble getting the police to take their cases seriously. It took police in Connecticut more than a month after the death of a Black woman to begin a criminal investigation, once again highlighting how racial bias can contribute to the lack of urgency when it comes to the lives of Black girls and women. As a first-generation college graduate, I'm privileged to sit here today during Women's History Month and tell you my story as a Young Women's Initiative cabinet member. But that is not the case for many young girls like me. The invisibility of missing Black girls and women reveals how they have been denied citizenship, and as a result, they are unprotected, punished, or unnoticed. Black women deserve more. Black families deserve more. Representative Richardson's bill is the first step Minnesota can take towards addressing the inequalities present in our public safety system. We must ensure the protection of Black women as a priority, and that can only be accomplished with your support today. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I urge the committee to move this bill forward and to help Minnesotans across the nation, across the state. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Abdullahi. Members, we have two members left with their hands up. We still have the Helens bill I want to get to. We have about 20 minutes left, and so I am going to ask you to be real brief, and if you're not, I'm giving you a forewarning that I'm not going to allow us to not get to the next bill, so please work with me here on this. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Many thanks to Representative Richardson and all the really powerful testifiers. All I wanted to note in response to Representative Raleigh's questions and your comment, Mr. Chair, is to note that the bill does place this office within the Office of Justice Programs. And just to highlight that the needs are really distinct, and this is a distinct office, and it will be with other programs. I guess I would expect they would co-locate. Representative Richardson could correct me. But it's with other programs that address a number of issues. So I don't think that those are concerns. It looks like it's a well-crafted bill that really addresses a distinctive need, but within a broader coordinated approach. So many thanks again, Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson.
Yeah, I concur, and I do appreciate Representative Raleigh's line because it allows an opportunity to share that reality that does exist across our state. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, I just got a couple comments and a couple questions. I'll start out.
Representative Johnson, I have 15 minutes left. I want to get to the other bill. And so I want to really encourage you collegially to move as quickly as you can here.
Chair Mariani, I will. Representative Richardson, to start out with a couple things. One, I don't see a fiscal note. Does it wondering notes? One had been requested. And the second part of it, since the funding's only for the first year, and there's directors and staffs and para, and only $500,000 allocated to this, what happens next year to the office if there is no grants available? Because in the funding bill, there is no office funding for the next year.
Fair questions, Chair Richards.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. Representative Johnson, when working with staff on crafting the bill, I asked the same question around the $500,000 and was informed that the $500,000 would be in the tails, and so that would continue beyond, and worked with Ben Johnson on that as well. And so I don't know if staff is here to share the response that I was given when asked that same question about the $500,000 in fiscal year, because the intent is that that would be $500,000 that would continue per year.
So we have the chair's intent. That might be a question for Mr. Walls. Certainly something that having your intent, something that we can subsequently craft.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Walls, please.
Mr. Chair, so the bill is drafted and it mentions that the funding is in fiscal 2023. That's the second year of the biennium. By the rules that we follow with MMB, any funding in the second year that is not noted as one-time funding is considered ongoing.
Very well. Representative Johnson.
I appreciate that, but I still think that dollar amount, I would still love to see a fiscal note, because just looking at the amount of staff,
A director is going to take with para and pent and benefits and everything is going to take about 25% or more of that, probably more of that alone. And it's not going to leave much for staff or any work to be done. So I think that's going to be a low number. So I think we really do need a fiscal note on this bill so we know what's actually involved in it. I understand the concept of this, and I do believe that it could do could work just fine combined with one director working both, because the staff know what they're doing. They need to know what they're doing, and the director could direct both. That would save funds. I understand the concept of this, but I do have some concerns because I don't know how many employees this is going to actually be. I haven't heard the number in the other, murdered indigenous people and relatives. I'm not sure how many, I haven't heard how many staff that ended up with as well. So I do have concerns. I know this is going to be laid over, and I'll just end it right there for now.
Representative Johnson, your questions are actually very good questions. I concur. That's why we have fiscal notes, and there's lots of different ways that we can configure this. My understanding, Chair Richardson, my staff is sending me a message here that the bill, because of apparently the language in it, it's going to require a stop at judiciary. Is that your understanding?
Oh, correct. Okay. Yes, this would require a stop in judiciary.
Okay, so I'm going to be changing the motion. However, I do expect this bill back here, and precisely for the kind of questions that Representative Johnson has just raised. Very well. Representative Richardson, I'll let you give us a few seconds of closing out. I'm going to change the motion, see if we can get your bill properly before another committee needs to look at it. I'll be communicating with that chair about the return path of this committee. Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, for the opportunity to present this bill today, and also for the work to get the task force set up as well. We've heard multiple times today how personal this bill and this office is to so many. And the heartbreaking piece of this is that so many of us have our own personal stories to share. I have a cousin who has been missing for over a decade with no trace. We have no idea what happened, what occurred. There's lots of rumors. And as Rep. Becker Fenn talked about, someone knows what occurred. And we know that this is a crisis. We know that this is an issue. We know that $500,000 is not enough to address this entire crisis, but it's a start. It is a beginning. And I hope that there is support for this bill, because we owe this to Minnesotans. We owe it to the families. We owe it to the survivors. And for everyone out there who is waiting for a loved one to come home, we hope that we can move this forward in honor of their loved ones. Thank you, Representative, or thank you, Chair Mariani.
Very well, thank you, Chair Richardson. The chair then changes his intent. We had basically the chair calling this forward for possible inclusion, but learning that it's got to make a stop in another committee, that doesn't make sense unless the bill is possibly going to die here, which is not our intent. So the chair moves and House File, what happened to my number? House File 2849, we did not amend it, be referred to the Committee on Judiciary. The clerk will take the roll on that motion.
Chair Mariani.
Aye.
Chair Mariani, aye. Vice Chair Frazier?
Aye.
Vice Chair Frazier, aye. Representative Johnson?
Aye. We'll deal with it in judiciary.
Representative Johnson, aye. Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Edelson, aye. Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Feist, aye. Representative Grossel?
Aye.
Representative Grossel, aye. Representative Hollins?
Aye.
Aye. Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Holland?
Aye.
Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Representative Cleavorn?
Cleavorn, aye.
Representative Cleavorn?
Aye.
Representative Long?
Aye. Body, aye.
Representative Long? Representative Lucero? Representative Lucero?
Lucero, yes.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Mueller, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, aye. I apologize for the echo.
Representative Novotny, aye. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, aye.
Representative O'Neill, aye. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Representative Pinto, aye. Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Poston, aye. Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh, aye.
Representative Raleigh, aye. Representative Vang?
Aye.
Representative Vang, aye. Representative Chung?
Aye.
Representative Chung, aye. And coming back to Representative Long? And that concludes roll call with 18 ayes, 0 nays, and 1 absent.
Very well. With a vote of 18 ayes, 0 nays, and 1 absent, the motion prevails, and House File 2849 is referred to the Judiciary Committee. Representative Chair Richardson, thank you for the bill, and thank you to all the testifiers as well. Members, we're not going to act on the other bill. I was informed that I had not, given the custom and usage time for action of the bill, but nonetheless, it's important to have an informational hearing on House File 3856. So the chair is going to bring that bill
forward. Chair Mariani.
And hold on a second. The chair is going to bring that bill forward, and then we'll try to get as many of the testifiers as possible. We will then have a formal consideration of the bill at a future date. Representative Johnson.
I just wanted to bring up some issues, especially not particularly to this bill, but what happened with this bill. It mysteriously appeared on the committee website. And as far as we can tell, it appeared less than 24 hours before this committee. House rules require that the agenda and stuff be set 3 days in advance. We also have a bill tomorrow. It's borderline if it made the 3 days, although it's a bill we've heard before. What's more astonishing is with this bill, it was put up there. I didn't hear about it until it was after the amendment deadline. The amendment deadline is noon. I was advised about it by somebody outside this building.
Representative Johnson,
after 2 o'clock.
I have 7 minutes left, and I have a number of testifiers who expect to testify on this bill. I have already conceded, you and I had this conversation, that it is in the chair's estimation. And there is discretion, by the way, in the rule for the chair. It's the chair's call that we not act on this bill formally before us, precisely because I want to make sure that the public has the kind of notice that customarily we provide. And so, Representative Johnson, I don't want to use up the time of the testifiers. If you want, you can bring up this issue the next time we come together, and I'll give you 10 minutes to go through that entire thing that you want to share, but at this point, I want to move forward with our testimony.
I do trust that if there is a public testimony that on this bill that wishes come up the next time when this bill is brought up again, they will be allowed, because usually what happens
most likely they will. Representative Johnson, most likely they will. With that, Representative Hollins, your bill is not formally before us, but we are having an informational hearing. You have several testifiers, and perhaps Representative Hollins, you can do like a quick 10-second introduction, and then we'll go to your testifiers as quickly as possible. Representative Hollins.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. I will touch on this bill very quickly and then ask my testifiers to discuss it. So House File 3856, or the Survivors Justice Act, does two main things. First, it encourages judges to depart from the applicable sentencing guidelines by presuming a departure is appropriate where the criminal conduct was the result of an experience of victimization. Second, it grants an opportunity for resentencing to those currently serving a sentence that might have been lower had they have had the benefit of the encouraged victim-centered departure in this bill. Boom. Now we can go to testifiers. Islands-free Minnesota.
Katie Kramer, please come forward.
Good afternoon, Chair. If the author and the chair are willing, I would love to prioritize the testimony of Samantha, who's an impacted person, and Nicole Matthews with the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition, and then circle back to me if there's time. I'd just love to prioritize their testimony if you're willing.
Very well. So the next person is Kendra Saitoff. Is that correct?
Yes. Hi, Chair Mariani.
Hello. Welcome.
Thank you. I just want to echo what Katie said. I'd love to prioritize Samantha and Nicole's testimony.
Okay. Right.
And if there's time, to go back to me. Thank
very
you.
Well. Very well. Samantha, please come forward, state your name for the record, and give us your testimony.
All right. I'm Samantha Hyges, Chair Mariani and members of the committee. I'm testifying today in support of the Survivors Justice Act, House File 3856. On December 13th, 2021, the Board of Pardons unanimously granted me clemency. A year ago today, I would have never imagined that I would be a free woman with the opportunity to tell lawmakers about the importance for second chances for people like myself. At the age of 19, I committed an unspeakable act. Terrified and alone with an abusive boyfriend who had isolated me from my family, friends, and medical professionals, I gave birth to my daughter in the bathtub of an apartment we shared. Shortly after the birth, and as a result of my boyfriend's threats to kill both of us if I did not do it myself, I drowned my baby in the bathwater, thinking it was the kindest thing to do in the moment. When the enormity of what I had done hit me, I attempted suicide a few days later by slitting my wrists in the same tub. I labored with my secret for years, but eventually broke down and confided in someone who alerted the police. I was arrested, prosecuted, and convicted at trial of second-degree murder. I was sentenced to 25 years in custody. My abuser was never held accountable because, under advice of counsel, with my appeal pending, I refused to testify against him. I live with the consequences of my actions every day, and I offer up each day an atonement. When I entered into MCF Shakopee 13 years ago, I vowed to take the opportunity to not only reflect on my past, but also grow from it. I took countless groups like Grief and Loss and Surviving Violence. In these groups, I was able to begin processing my life and the choices that led me there. I also jumped at every chance possible to grow and learn as an individual, from groups to restorative justice projects, to getting my education with a certificate in office support, two associates of arts degrees, and graduating with honors with a bachelor's degree in communications. I also contributed to my community by training service dogs, helping others as a conflict coach, and by being a positive peer in the Warden's Positive Peer Culture Group. Above all, I dedicated myself to the best possible, being the best possible mother I could be to my living daughter, who was born a year before I entered prison. Even while being incarcerated, with the help of my family, I was able to be an amazing and involved mom. During my time in prison, I came to realize my full potential and see what I have to offer this world. And luckily for me, I was one of the few to get this second chance from the Board of Pardons. I will be forever grateful that Governor Walz, Attorney General Ellison, and Chief Justice Gilday believed in me. I am also grateful to my sentencing judge, who wrote in support of my clemency petition. I have been out for just over 2 months, and I already have employment. I'm a fully involved parent. I am part of the COVID Confidence Committee through the U of M, and I am continuing to look for ways to give back. There are others just like me who have committed crimes in the context of and as a result of their experience of an abusive relationship. Most cannot get counsel for their clemency cases, like I was, leading to the individualized review to the Board of Pardons was able to do. If I had not been granted my clemency, I would still be in prison for another 4 years. There was no mechanism for me to be released. So I ask you to pass this bill because it will give second chances to so many more like me. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Hodges. And a tough issue. It's important that the people's body deal with tough issues. Please continue on your path for redemption and goodness.
Thank you.
With that, Nicole Matthews.
Thank you, Chair Mariani and members of the committee. Nicole Matthews, Jaganashimung, Manidu, Baneshi Kwein, Dago, Migazin, Dodame, Gawa, Babaganakag, and Dunjaba. My English name is Nicole Matthews, and my Indian name is Spirit Bird Woman. I'm Eagle Clan, and I'm from the White Earth Band of Ojibwe. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition. We are a statewide tribal coalition serving 40 member programs and 117 individual members. We collaborated with the Minnesota Department of Corrections, Violence Free Minnesota, and the Northwest Indian Community Development Center on a project designed to improve criminal justice responses to victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking. We interviewed 62 Native American women. 29 women were currently incarcerated at Shakopee Prison at the time of the interview, and 33 women were incarcerated at Shakopee within the previous 5 years. On any given day, Native women make up 20% of the prison population in Shakopee. This contrasts with Native American men, who make up approximately 8% of the male prison population, and we make up only about 1% of our state's population. The interviews revealed the many ways that victimization can lead to incarceration for Native women in Minnesota and what services and supports may effectively break that cycle. Some of the information that we learned from the interviews include: all but one of the women that we spoke to had a history of relationship abuse. In fact, 97% had a history of relationship abuse or sexual violence prior to their incarceration. Most of the women experienced multiple forms of violence prior to incarceration. One woman told us, "Starting at the age of 10, I was getting in trouble for truancy. I got molested at that age and never reported it, and that's when I started running away." Only 1/3 of the women sought out advocacy services for support, and only 1/3 of the women reported their experiences to law enforcement. One woman said, "When I was 11 or 12, I told my mom that her husband was sexually abusing me. My grandma told me not to tell anyone else about it. My mom left him for a while, but it didn't last. I ran away. When I was 18, I reported all that he did to me, and they said that I waited too long. He never faced any charges." Many of the women drew direct and indirect connections between the violence and abuse they experienced and their involvement in the criminal justice system. One woman said, "I was with an abusive boyfriend and I took the charge for him. He stole a bunch of stuff and brought it out to my car and they charged me since it was my car. I didn't think I could be held accountable for it and I wanted to take it to trial." 75% of the participants identified themselves as having a mental illness. PTSD from prior trauma, anxiety, and depression were the most prevalent. It was critical to most of the women that they return to the communities where their children and families were located. Reestablishing relationships with their children was of high importance. Our Native people are deeply impacted by colonization and historical trauma, which often leads to violence and abuse, and sometimes leads to incarceration. Criminalization should never be the penalty for victimization. These survivors are members of our communities, and they deserve to have support to find healing and return to their children and families. They deserve to have supportive services and compassionate systems responses. The Survivors Justice Act is a great step in that direction and one that Minnesota must pass to support victims and survivors. Chinigwich, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Matthews. And I want to thank Your Grace and Samantha's and Katie and Kendra as well. I am out of time. I hope that Katie and Ms. Kramer, Ms. Satoff, hopefully we can have you back. I will work with our minority lead to make sure that we've got the bill before us in a form where it can be properly vetted and acted upon. Meanwhile, thank you for this very difficult work that you are about and for challenging us to look beyond the old ways of looking at things so that we can close these cycles of violence in our state. Representative Hollins, so last few seconds, and then I'm just going to conclude since we don't have the bill before us, but we will have this bill back. Representative Hollins.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. I know that this is a really difficult topic, but I think it's an important one, and I appreciate your time. I also want to thank the testifiers today for speaking about their experiences, which must be really difficult. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Holland. Members, so that concludes our business for today. We will adjourn again tomorrow morning in our regular Friday morning slot. Until then, please have a good evening, and we'll see you all tomorrow. This committee stands adjourned.